Heralds of Hope Incorporated presents Hope for Today.
Hello, friend, and welcome to Hope for Today. My name is J. Mark Horst. I'm your friend and Bible teacher. The program you're listening to is produced by Heralds of Hope, an international gospel radio and literature ministry. Each week, the Bible teaching broadcasts of Heralds of Hope circle the globe in English and 15 other major languages. Last week on Hope for Today, we were studying from Daniel chapter 5. The title of our study was Weighed and Wanting. Chapter 5 records the account of King Belshazzar and the mysterious handwriting on the wall. The last phrase of Daniel chapter 4 and verse 37 says, "Those who walk in pride, he," that's God, "is able to put down." Belshazzar ignored the lessons of his predecessor, and he paid an awful price. In our previous study, I said there were several scenes that illustrate the eventual verdict, weighed and wanting. The first scene we looked at was audacious arrogance. One of the meanings of audacious is contemptuous of law, religion, or decorum. And that fits the opening scene so well. We didn't get to finish looking at that scene, so we'll return to it today. But before we do that, let me read the text, Daniel chapter 5, beginning with verse 1. Belshazzar the king made a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and drank wine in the presence of 1,000. While he tasted the wine, Belshazzar gave the command to bring the gold and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple which had been at Jerusalem, that the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines might drink from them. Then they brought the gold vessels that had been taken from the temple of the house of God which had been in Jerusalem, and the king and his lords, his wives, and his concubines drank from them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened, and his knees knocked against each other. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spoke, saying to the wise men of Babylon, "Whoever reads this writing and tells me its interpretation shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Now all the king's wise men came, but they could not read the writing or make known to the king its interpretation. Then King Belshazzar was greatly troubled, his countenance was changed, and his lords were astonished. The queen, because of the words of the king and his lords, came to the banquet hall. The queen spoke, saying, "O king, live forever. Do not let your thoughts trouble you, nor let your countenance change. There is a man in your kingdom in whom is the spirit of the holy God, and in the days of your father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge, understanding, interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation." Then Daniel was brought in before the king. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Are you that Daniel who is of the captives of Judah, whom my father the king brought from Judah? I have heard of you, that the Spirit of God is in you, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom are found in you. Now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known to me its interpretation. But they could not give the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of you, that you can give interpretations and explain enigmas. Now, if you can read the writing and make known to me its interpretation, you shall be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around your neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Picture with me Belshazzar sitting on an elevated platform, leading the crowd below him in rounds of drinking toasts to the power of their gods. As the wine flows freely and dulls the senses, natural inhibitions are thrown aside. So the king, his face flushed with the effects of the wine, orders the gold and silver vessels from the temple to be brought. He intends to pass them out and use them as drinking cups in celebration of Babylon's gods. This is where we find the audacious arrogance of the king. If the king had been sober, he most likely wouldn't have given this command, because no human being had any right to use what belonged to the gods. But Belshazzar threw law and religion and decorum to the wind. His actions remind me of the saying, "Sow the wind and reap the whirlwind." He certainly did that. It's also possible that he did this sacrilegious act intentionally. It could have been his way of putting down the God of Israel. At the same time, he's elevating his heathen deities. I want you to try to picture this from heaven's viewpoint. Here's Belshazzar praising the heathen deities that haven't been able to preserve the vast Babylonian empire. The king knows there's not much left of the kingdom. Basically, what's left is just the city. So maybe he's trying to put on a brave face. We don't know. But regardless, Psalm 2 reminds us that the Lord will laugh at men like this, and he holds them in derision. Whatever his motivations, Belshazzar's audacious arrogance offends the true God. The temple vessels were the only tangible thing left of the Jewish temple. They were a symbol of God's presence and his name. God promised they would be preserved until the time when temple worship would be restored. Those vessels were the hope of Israel in their captivity. You can read about those things in Jeremiah chapters 27 and 28. Treating holy things as common or treating them with disdain is a grievous mistake. Belshazzar's mishandling of these vessels would set in motion the change of kingdoms that would lead eventually to those vessels being restored to their rightful place, a restored temple in a restored Jerusalem. You know, the divine irony is delicious. Belshazzar's blasphemy is shocking, much like actor Morgan Freeman's blasphemy. Several years ago, in an interview, he was asked, "Are you a God-fearing man?" This is how he responded. "No, I don't fear anything. I'm God." We've also seen shocking blasphemy in the art world. And you know, these things make the news headlines through their crude and offensive depictions of God and Jesus. And we as believers are rightly offended, and we mourn the disrespect. But do you know there are more subtle forms of blasphemy that we as believers sometimes engage in? It's done sometimes out of ignorance, and sometimes carelessness, but sometimes we're just outright disobedient. One form of blasphemy is speech, and the third commandment prohibits misusing the name of God in any way that's not representative of his holy name and character. There are all kinds of situations where people misuse the name of the Lord. Oh, they won't use God's name or Jesus' name directly. Instead, they'll give the name a little bit of a different form. But you know, it's all the same thing. Most people wouldn't express the same level of arrogance that Morgan Freeman did, but many live as though they are God. many professing Christ followers embrace a practical kind of atheism. It's expressed this way: I can do just fine on my own. Thank you. That mindset was what infected our first parents in the Garden of Eden, and it surely has been passed on to us. So let's be careful that we don't embrace a similar kind of audacious arrogance like Belshazzar did. The second scene that we see then is abject terror. It's amazing how quickly we humans can move from one emotion to another. In the middle of this drunken orgy, when praises are being shouted to the pagan deities, suddenly the fingers of a man appear writing on the plastered wall of the palace. The use of the image of God's fingers is limited in the Old Testament. In Egypt, when Pharaoh's magicians couldn't duplicate the third plague, they said to Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God." That's Exodus chapter 8 and verse 19. And then we know on Mount Sinai, the finger of God inscribed two stone tablets with what we call the Ten Commandments. There's one other occurrence of the term in Psalm 8:3, where the psalmist refers to the heavens as the work of your fingers. The finger of God writing the law was revelation. The heavens are the work of God's finger. That was creation. The finger of God brought the plagues on Egypt for the purpose of redemption. This time, the fingers of God wrote a message of condemnation on the wall of Belshazzar's palace. So again, try to imagine this scene with me. The raucous party is in full swing. The wine is flowing, the music is blaring, they're singing, and they're shouting praises to the gods. And all of a sudden, the king sucks in his breath. What is that? A disembodied hand appears on the wall opposite the lampstand, and it's writing on the plaster. Albert Barnes suggests that it may have been the very lampstand taken from the temple in Jerusalem, and the nearness of the writing to it intimates that the rebuke was directed at Belshazzar for his sacrilege. My friend, I hate to interrupt, but we're almost out of time for today's broadcast. Lord willing, we'll be back next week to continue this study. In the meantime, if you'd like an audio CD or printed copy of this complete teaching, just write and request it by its title, Weighed and Wanting. Now, the quickest way for you to contact me is to send an email to mail@heraldsofhope. That email address again is mail@heraldsofhope.org. Or write to Hope for Today, Box 3, Breezewood, Pennsylvania, 15533. Remember, you can request a printed manuscript or an audio CD of this teaching, Weighed and Wanting. Once again, the quickest way for you to contact me is to send an email to mail@heraldsofhope.org. Or write to Hope for Today, Box 3, Breezewood, Pennsylvania, 15533. Remember, you can request a free copy of this teaching, Weighed and Wanting. It's available in print or on an audio CD. And don't forget, our Bible teaching programs are available to you all the time and anytime at the website, twr360.org. That's twr360.org. Now, friend, I urge you to tune in next week as we continue our study, Weighed and Wanting. And until then, keep looking for that blessed hope.